Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Have you ever felt like you've tried everything to heal from the pain of sexual abuse, and yet nothing seems to really be helping? Well, one of the reasons why most people struggle to break free from the pain of past child abuse is because the techniques out there are positioned as a one-size-fits-all answer. What I want you to know is that there are actually 3 distinct phases on the path to recovery, and I'd love to share with you about these phases, what issues you must resolve to move to the next phase, and what kinds of support you'll need in order to move forward as quickly and completely as possible. The road to recovery is much easier when you know what stage you're in and what to do next. So don't hesitate. Go to www.rachelgrantcoaching.com/checklist and get your 9-page guide today. Now, on to our show. Welcome everyone to Beyond Surviving, the safe space for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to receive support, resources, and share their stories. Beyond Surviving is about freedom, healing, connection, and even laughter and fun. Most importantly, it's about letting go of the pain of abuse and finally moving on. I'm Rachel Grant, and for those of you who don't yet know me, I've been a sexual abuse recovery coach since 2007 and am the author of Beyond Surviving, the Final Stage of Recovery from Sexual Abuse. I'm so, so glad to be here today with my guest, Amy, who's going to be sharing with us about her journey of healing and her move into theater and the arts and how creativity has really helped her heal from PTSD, sexual assault, and trauma. So I want to get right into introducing Amy to you all and get her on because she has so much experience and so much to share with us. I just want you to know, first of all, that she is a PTSD peer-to-peer specialist. She's an artist, author, writer for Huffington Post, speaker for TEDx and RAIN, health advocate, survivor, award-winning actress and playwright, and she tours around sharing the lessons that she's learned from trauma through her writing, mixed media art, performance, and inspirational speaking. She's the creator of Gutless and Grateful, her Broadway world-nominated one-woman autobiographical musical, which she's toured nationwide. She's also created programming that combines mental health advocacy, sexual assault awareness, and Broadway theater for college campuses and international conferences. She's studied as a playwright and performance artist in the National Musical Theater Institute at the world-renowned Eugene O'Neill Theater Center. She has an original full-length drama, Imprints, that premiered at the New York City Producers Club in May 2016 that explored how trauma affects the family as well as the individual. Now, one of the latest projects Amy's been working on is her own beautiful detour, and she's created hashtag LoveMyDetour as a campaign to help others cope in the face of, well, unexpected events that take us in directions we weren't necessarily thinking our lives would head in. Detourism is also the subject of her TEDx talk and upcoming book, My Beautiful Detour, that will be coming out soon. You can learn more about her at amyoes.com. But without further ado, Amy, hello, how are you? Welcome.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. You know, we've been chatting, I think it's been about a year now.
Since we first connected
and going back and forth, and life and detours have been happening, right? And but we haven't given up, and we've found our way here to have this conversation today. So I'd love for us to start off today by you just telling us, you know, a bit about yourself and your story, and kind of where you're at these days.
Where to start? Well, you know, you mentioned in my bio that I do a lot of musical theater, and that was how I grew up. You know, I was born knowing that that's what I had to do. And so I studied that, you know, relentlessly. And when I was 15, you know, I found a wonderful voice teacher who really took me under his wing, and I really, you know, connected with this voice teacher because not only did he know everything about Broadway, but, you know, I have a very intense love of nature and spirituality and poetry and all of those things. And you know, so did he. And so it really felt like a, you know, mentor relationship. And I knew him since I was 15. And, you know, then when I turned 17, I mean, you know, looking back, knowing what I know now, I could see all the signs of grooming. But, you know, once, you know, the abuse started, you know, for me, it was all of a sudden. And I grew up so sheltered and innocent. I honestly thought, you know, those things only happen, you know, on the news, but it could never happen to me. So I literally didn't know what was happening. Like, no one had ever talked to me about anything like that before. So I went into the, you know, PTSD, the freeze response, and I just became very numb. The first thing I remember is just, you know, feeling like, you know, imagining myself like a dot on the ceiling. And, you know, the next day and every day after that, I didn't feel like myself, but I could not really connect it to anything. I still could not connect it. You know, again, it's funny knowing what I know now, but I just thought, wow, okay, something just weird happened to me. I don't know what's going on. And I couldn't even connect the dots, but I just knew I was acting different. And it wasn't long after that that people around me, you know, first my family and then my school, started noticing that I was acting differently, to the point where I was building up this awful anxiety that, that I could not get out of my system. And I remember, you know, really affecting my body, like having this intense pain in my chest and, you know, just hyperventilating in the middle of class and having to just get up in class and just, you know, walk out. And I just was scared for my life because I didn't recognize me anymore. In the meantime, I still could not connect it with my voice teacher. So I was still going back for lessons, and he was telling me there was something wrong with me, and it must have been my family dynamics, and we all needed family therapy. And so, you know, my family was, you know, at all ends, you know, tearing each other apart, you know, in the meantime, wondering, you know, why I had become an anxious fireball. And I just remember feeling like I was headed for a train crash and not even understanding why. And when I first realized that, you know, I was sexually abused, I was actually walking through Barnes & Noble. Actually, what happened was I came back over the summer, after so much of my senior year of high school, and I could tell as soon as I got there on the first day, I thought to myself, I am not going to make it. Like, I can't even sit in class without having a panic attack. So I wrote this 2-page, like, dissertation to the headmaster saying, and I didn't even know what was going on, but I said, I need 2 months off from school to just heal and walk on the beach with my mom. And I had no idea what I was writing, but I guess, you know, I was such a good student my, you know, all this time, and everyone had noticed this dramatic change in me that the headmaster just said, okay, you know, Amy knows what she needs, all right. And I remember my mom in the car was looking at me like, okay, Amy, what is your master plan here? And I said, Mom, I just want to go to Barnes & Noble every day with you, and I want to color, and I want to walk on the beach. And again, I had no idea what I was talking about, but, like, I needed something. Mm-hmm. And so one of these days, and this moment is actually in my one-woman show, you know, I was just walking through Barnes & Noble, and I was looking in the, you know, healing and spirituality section just for some kind of self-help kind of thing. And I happened to see this, you know, big yellow book, and it was The Courage to Heal, which, you know, is a huge, you know, Hallmark, you know, book in, you know, that everyone should take a look at. And I knew nothing about it, but, you know, the title was very intriguing to me. And it's still so funny that I remember pulling it out, and the caption was, for survivors of sexual abuse. And, you know, I talk about that so frequently, but back then, you know, that was, again, something I only heard on late night news. So I literally laughed, and I put it back, like, yeah, right, that's like learning about, you know, Civil War victims or something. Like, it has nothing to do with me. So I put it back. But then, you know, something intuitively rang out to me, like, I don't know. Something made me go back for it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And everything else that happened is, like, you know, meant to be after that, because I just opened it, and I happened to open to that checklist of symptoms towards the beginning, where, you know, you can check off on, you know, I feel numb, I don't feel like myself anymore, I don't trust myself anymore, I feel like there's something wrong with me. And, you know, it was so funny, you know, as I was going down the list, like, that's when I had my revelation that, like, oh my God, this is me. Mm-hmm. So then I just remember, like, shutting that book, and now, you know, I had this big secret that I had no idea what to do with. I mean, what do you do with something like that? You in,
yeah,
in Fairfield, Connecticut, and no one's talking. You know, this was 2004, 2005, and, you know, people... When there was no Me Too era, there was nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what to do. In the meantime, I was still going back for lessons, having no idea what I was doing. So confused. Like, you know, maybe I'm over exaggerating, you know, and I still didn't know who to tell. And I've written several plays on this, and I have a few scenes where I did try to, you know, I have three wonderful brothers and a very supportive family, and there were times where I did try to hint or tell some of them, and, you know, it was so out of our, you know, range of thought that nothing was getting through. And then I finally did tell my mom on one of our walks by on the beach, and that's a very special moment. That's actually in another one of the scenes in my play. You can tell I heal a lot through my playwriting and mm-hmm. performance. But anyway, that was April, right around my birthday, April 10th, 2005. And now it's like, okay, now we know. Now, like, no one talks about this. What do we do about all this? And so we were going to, you know, go for therapy or, like, what else would you do when, you know, trying to think what to do? That was April 10th, and then, you know, April 25th, we had our big Passover Seder, and my mom and I were treating that, you know, my mom and I were the only people that knew now. And, we, you know, Passover was always, like, our favorite holiday because we loved food, we loved entertaining. And, you know, we said, okay, this is going to be our great comeback dinner and celebration. And, you know, because Passover, the story, is all about redemption and freedom and liberation. And that night, you know, I just... I had a very bad stomach ache that didn't go away. And that's when everything happened very, very quickly. You know, my stomach got very distended, and my dad, who's a doctor, just took me for an x-ray to a local hospital just to see what was going on. A few hours later, I was in a coma, and I guess the surgeons cut me open, and there was so much internal pressure that my stomach, you know, actually exploded to the ceiling of the operating room, a total gastrectomy. And long story short, I was going to be here all day. It turned into, God, now 20 surgeries and, you know, basically, you know, I had no stomach. So when I finally woke up from a coma months later, they told me that, like, they didn't know if I'd ever be able to eat or drink again. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know, again, everything was uncertain. I didn't know it would be 7 years without even an ice cube or anything. And what took so long wasn't just, you know, waiting for all my insides to heal. Because, you know, I'd gotten sepsis. Apparently it was a big blood clot that was just weighing on an artery that had built up from keeping all that in, which is one, you know, hypothesis. But then we had to find a surgeon with, you know, the creativity to figure out, you know, this had never happened before. So it's not like a set, like, okay, broken leg, you do this, this, and that. You know, we should find a surgeon that could get out his arts and crafts and figure out how to make me a digestive system from nothing. And we found one 7 years later who, in a 19-hour surgery, that was the first part, and he took whatever intestine that I had left, and he made me like a little pouch. So I guess the closest thing you could call it is a, you know, be almost like a gastric bypass kind of thing. But it wasn't a perfect science. It still isn't. You know, there's still problems with it. And you know, the point is, you know, all throughout, you know, that time that I couldn't eat or drink anything, you know, I also had to stay very numb because, you know, how do you get your mind off like a primal need? And I was starving, and I couldn't even have an ice cube. And so I learned once again, I relearned that habit just like I had learned during the abuse to be very, very numb. Mm-hmm. So I got very, very good at it. So really the healing, you know, the physical healing from the surgeries, that was, I say relatively, because it wasn't, that was the easy part. But, you know, and it was easy because I had a whole team of doctors who at least, like, knew what was at hand and all that stuff. But once I could eat and, you know, food brought up feeling and, you know, suddenly I had to think about these things that I hadn't thought about since my coma. And that was the emotional healing that was harder to talk about and for other people, you know, to deal with. And for me to know what to do with. So really, it was a very long road ahead of me. And to kind of cap it off, basically, I found my creativity through, I mean, my healing through creativity. I found that it was the best container for all the anxiety, the anger, anything. I could just channel into that because you can always go into negative coping mechanisms. And believe me, I did, you know, plenty. You know, I had, you know, my main thing was, I had like a mantra to myself, actually, that I wrote a song about that to another one of my shows, that, you know, keep moving so your heart stands still. Like, I was just chronic. Like, I would just, like, pace around for hours just to, you know, feel something, like, mechanical. So I didn't have to think and I didn't have to feel. You know, I couldn't even, you know, sit still. And that was, like, my thing. That was how I kind of dissociated from the world. I called myself the queen of dissociation because I got very good at it and just not feeling anything at all when, you know, as an artist, you know, you want to feel. And so that was why, you know, going back to singing, reclaiming my voice, you know, telling myself, like, my voice teacher didn't give that to me. I had that all along. You know, eventually, you know, I was rehospitalized for many setbacks, but the blessing in that was I discovered art, you know, first by just taking, like, toilet paper from the Yale Hospital bathroom and collaging with it, and by the time I was discharged, I had, like, 70 mixed media paintings, you know, dance, you know, anything I could find where I could. The truth is, and what I try to, you know, work with survivors on now is, yeah, you're supposed to talk about it, but then you hear these statistics that, you know, I don't even know how much it is this year, but hopefully not as much now that everyone's talking about it. But, you know, 1 in 9 are, you know, cases, you know, only get reported. And it's because people don't understand that words, being able to verbalize these things, you know, is usually the hardest part, and usually it takes a lot of other mediums over time to get those words out. And for me, the art was a very innocuous way to just start expressing something beyond the numbness. Because the truth is sometimes the words don't come because you don't even know what's going on. But through this art, which I had all this time in the hospital to do, you know, it started just as colors and strokes, but seeing those colors and strokes turned into shapes and then things only I could recognize, and I was able to literally connect abstract dots and make connections in my mind, but not, you know, like I had to, like, journal the actual words, which can be very difficult. But, you know, eventually that's how I was finally able to, you know, cognitively, you know, realize it. And then eventually speak about it. And the speaking about it actually didn't take me, I mean, it took me, you know, 10 years. You know, this is a long process that you have to be patient with yourself. But the point is that it did happen with patience and you know, self-love and support where you can. And, you know, at first I really did feel like I needed a confrontation, like I needed to see him. My family tells me that the first words I said coming out of my coma was it was him. And then I, like, brought my family in my ICU for an intervention, saying that I wanted him back here so I could, like, talk to him. And, you know, for years I wanted to see him one more time. I didn't know why. I didn't know if I missed him or hated him, or, you know, because I'd woken up in a new world completely. But it's funny that eventually, once I did put together my own one-woman show, got Living Grateful, and once I started, you know, doing things for me and remembering what I loved, you know, I didn't care about him. And the truth is, he's still alive. He's still teaching, believe it or not. But, you know, there's nothing I can do but live my life and tell my story and help, you know, other survivors and also, just as importantly, bystanders understand what the freeze response is, because, you know, it can really look like everything's fine or someone's just out of it for no reason, or maybe even like healthy consent, that they're not fighting back. And that's what I thought I was doing, which I really felt a lot of guilt for. But whenever I, you know, go to colleges and things like that, I think, or anywhere, I think, I don't care who you are, whether you're a survivor, an ally, or you're some random person on the street, I think everyone needs to at least understand what the various reactions to trauma are, because we all experience some range of trauma in our lives, and we all have reactions that we don't understand. And what I found is that, and why the arts are so great, is that we heal through community, and we heal through empathy and understanding, and the arts are like this universal container that it doesn't matter what words we're saying or what our individual stories are, but through theater, through art, through music, through dance, through cooking, you know, through these creative acts that people around the world can enjoy, they're also beautiful means of expression, that we can express joy, pain, suffering, and somehow, you know, it creates this universal language that we understand, you know, and we feel welcome. So anyway, that's how I found my healing through that. That was my secret, not a big secret, but I think it's important. So,
Amy,
there.
Thank you so much.
So there. I love that. So there you go. Yes, lady. Thank you so much for just sharing your story and so many of the layers. And, you know, there's just so much going on there that, you know, we can highlight. I think the main thing that kind of came up for me as you were sharing your story is that I think for a lot of survivors of abuse, we experience trauma in the context of something that we enjoy. We were just living our lives, right? And then this person, whoever the abuser might be, interrupts that process. And one of the things that I find really inspiring about your story is that, you know, it would have been very, very easy to say, well, I'm never going to sing again, or I'm never going to act, you know, I'm putting all of that away because it was tied up with this, you know, experience of trauma. And I love how instead you have taken all of that and used it, you know, as your weapon for spreading awareness and your own healing. I think that's super powerful.
Well, you know what? That would be letting him win, you know. And I got to tell you, that took a very long time to learn that you're missing Mommy's, but, you know, realizing he's not the one that gave it to me, because when he, you know, started the abuse, I thought my whole world was taken away, and I literally felt drained until, again, and I wrote a musical about this to help me through this, but I realized, wow, I had all that stuff all along, and he just recognized that in me, which is great, but the good part is I didn't need him for it, you know, and this is who I am. So I think the important part for any survivor is to remember who they were before this, and nothing can take that away. And what I like to say is, you know, my second TED Talk was about, you know, the archetypal hero's journey, and the beauty of that is, you know, it's this person and something happens to him and he's taken to the underworld. You know, it's a universal theme you'll find from Star Wars to Finding Nemo, you know, and in this underworld or this special world, they have to fight all these demons and all these kind of things. But then they finally, you know, find their treasure, and then they have to come back to society. And they come back with these gifts they've learned from fighting in the underworld. But what they realize is, you know, everyone after trauma, you know, when they recover, they just want life to go back to just how it was before. But I think the biggest lesson we all have to learn is, you know, our world will never be the same. But, you know, it can be, you know, I think of it as a mosaic, like, you know, it's a piece of glass that was once whole, that's shattered, but a mosaic, you know, you put it together, you know, differently, but, you know, a mosaic's even more beautiful. It's art, and that's kind of the hero's journey storyline, that we come back to not our original home, but a new home that we've kind of brightened with the trials and tribulations of what we've been through. And that's what we have to remember, that we as survivors, we do have a special gift, even though, you know, it was very hard and very traumatizing, you know.
Yeah.
We can use that to better ourselves and better our world. But we just listen. You know, the hard part is that we have to accept that things aren't going to be like they used to be, but that doesn't have to necessarily be a bad thing.
Beautifully said. Cheers to that. Yes, folks. Are you hearing this lady? I hope you're listening.
Yeah,
she's speaking some truth for you today. Beautiful. Oh, my goodness. So, let's talk a little bit about how people can get in touch with you and some of the projects that you're working on right now. What do you want people to know about that?
Okay, what first? Here's my flaw. I do too much. But hey, expression's how we heal. So first, again, I finally went back to theater and song and all of that. So now I've been writing plays like crazy. I'm developing a few right now, but what I've been touring since 2012, which you mentioned, is Gutless and Grateful, which is the story of, you know, me basically, you know, loving theater and all the medical stuff happening to me and the abuse as well. And, you know, I tour that everywhere to, you know, high schools and colleges, conferences, organizations and theaters. And what I like to do after, you know, it's a 70-minute musical, and then I do a talk back after about whatever the various theme is of the audience that, you know, I'm working with. And I'll either do a Q&A or a creativity workshop, or, you know, I especially for, you know, survivors and, you know, things like that, I love talking about, you know, the free response and ways we can, you know, fight back against that. I'm actually doing something in the fall at Wesleyan College, which I'm excited about because they have a wonderful sexual assault initiative going on right now. I've done that Take Back the Nights, things like that. So I'm still doing that. I've been doing that since 2012. But I'm also working on a three-act play called Flicker and a Firestarter, which is finally getting workshopped by a wonderful theater company in New York, where I'm actually played by two characters, which is kind of the pre-coma Amy and the post-coma Amy. And it's all about how, you know, trauma kind of separates you, and the two girls have to find healing together by, you know, accepting what each other has been through and fighting back against their abuser, using a lot of metaphors of sound and light. And that's going really well. I'm very excited about that. And then the last thing that I'll mention is a musical that I'm working on with 14 of my original songs called Passageways. And that's really the most specifically about how I felt during the abuse and how I healed using art. And what I'm really excited about is it's actually going to use a lot of like live painting on stage, because this has been on my playwriting bucket list forever, because I'm actually going to show how I was just, I couldn't speak about it, and everything, those secrets made me do, the good, the bad, the ugly, and then how art was such a release. And I gotta tell you, writing that has been so much fun, because it really was such a wonderful way to heal. So I'm like so excited for them. And, you know, I have the free TED Talks out now, and then my book should be coming out very soon, but it is going to be available for pre-order on my website, My Beautiful Detour. And you can learn all about my detour movement, hashtag love my detour. I have a whole little thing about how it doesn't matter what we've been through, any detour in life. But like I said, we heal through community and through that shared idea that we have things in life we don't expect. So you can also learn about how to be a detourist on my website, which is AMYOES.com, and check it out. It has all my art, my TED Talks, my performances, and I always love hearing from you guys. So, yeah.
Awesome. So there's no shortage of ways to get connected with Amy and to hear what she has to say and to learn from her. So do please go check that out. Look out for her TED Talks. I'll put some links here in the show notes. And I'm also
going to... I'll give you my social media, the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram stuff, too.
Yeah, all that will be there.
I want all that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure, for sure. So get connected with Amy and take inspiration, you know, from her story today to imagine, you know, the detours that you've taken in your life and how those might be, you know, serving you in some way or how you can use them to make your life whatever it is that you would like it to be. And listen in, I'm going to play a clip here at the end of the show of one of Amy's songs from her new musical, How Dare You. So stay tuned. Amy, I just want to say thank you for being with us today and really appreciate
thank
you sharing
you,
your story
Rachel.
And your perspective. Absolutely. And for everyone listening, don't forget to visit rachelgrantcoaching.com to learn more about sexual abuse recovery coaching and check out the resources there. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Oh, yep.
Rachel, thank you for everything you do, you know,
oh my
on
goodness.
Your website and everything. I think that goes for all of us.
Thank you for that, Amy. I appreciate it. And tune back in next time, folks, because we have so much more to share. And until then, take good care of you. See you next time.
Bye.
And grown up and impress them with your put together mask, your soul bound up in glass. How dare you now present yourself with pride as I resent myself inside and burn with shame. I smile and praise your name. You tear with your facade to be this upright noble god when only I can see the shape of a slimy lying snake. You dare to put me on parade. I lord myself to make you say I can't live with myself. I have nobody else, and I'm the only one who knows your dirty little secrets. I'm the only one who dries your tears in the dark. I'm the only one who holds your burdens deep in my chest. I'm the only one who's lost your heart. How dare you, a dirty little tagalong for you to hold and drag along. Poor girl, she's very weak. She's quite bright, but she can't speak. They say poor child is wrong with her. How no one you teach song to her? Do they know I've been choice? Voice teachers to my voice. I hold his pain like no one can. He cries just like a little man. He's made a joke of music, made a mockery of art. My mentor writes like you believe. He wears his demons on his sleeve. I've opened up his heart and he's tearing mine apart. And I'm the only one chosen by the loopholes in your story. I'm the only one who's burned and dried up by the sun. I'm the one who hangs down in the shadows of your glory. I'm alone and I'm the only one. Stifled, silenced, mad, alone, bitter that you've stole my home, knowing I'm the dump that keeps your lies preserved in fear. To the world you show no trace of your wretched, shameful face. Only I will numbly cry for worlds that disappear. And I'm the only one choked by the loopholes in your story. I'm the only one who's burned and dried up by the sun. I'm the one who hangs down in the shadows of your glory. How dare you tire, but I can't buy rack. I strike myself a new attack. You slime swords like the birds. You will kill me with your words. I should have been my bubbly stuff and said this. I have big enough and said I stand her mute when I dare to dare refuse. Could have stabbed you with flames, could have shattered your name, could have taken control, could have screamed for my soul, could have pierced you with truth, could have rescued my youth. Anyone can wear a costume.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.